It's the Two Johnnies Podcast. Two Johnnies Podcast. Two Johnnies recording a podcast.
Hello, hello, hello.
You're welcome to the Two Johnnies Podcast, bringing you all the mayhem and news from the world of the Two Johnnies.
I'm Johnny B.
And I'm Johnny Smacks. Welcome to podcast 165, coming to you like shoddy, getting low, 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 low.
You started a bit low there.
Oh, jeez.
The apple bottom jeans are pulled off from here now.
Boots with the fur. On this week's podcast, we discuss comedy and meditating with Dermot Whelan.
By Marty, in a shocking turn of events, Paddy Fong was actually around last week, but Noel Furlong will be back with the news.
Her topics and pronunciation of certain words are outrageous. Maureen is here with her mystery topic.
And as traditional, it's threatening to call Liveline and talk to Joe.
Good afternoon to you.
Whenever you get annoyed about something, we round off the podcast with our yurts and darts of the week.
Good afternoon to you. Before commencing with proceedings, matters arising from last week's podcast.
Yes, Mr. Chairman Joe, on last week's topic of acting. Brian emailed in saying, I worked with a stunt crew on the film of Asterix. It's an old French character. There was a few parts shot in Ireland back in 2011. The part I was involved in was shot down near Fenor in County Clare and was supposed to take 3 days. 3 weeks later, we were still there, but it was some crack.
Jeez.
It's some eye-opener to see the money involved. There was a big cast to start, about 100 plus extras, plus the main actors, then camera crew, makeup, wardrobe, transport, and a load more, casting agents, location agents, plus whoever else. I don't know what they did.
I imagined it that, like, when we got into TV, that that's what it was going to be like. And then we were sitting on the side of the road eating beef sandwiches from some fucking scandalous deli. Like, it's not.
It's the worst.
The worst deli sandwich I ever had.
Like. Maury, you should have seen this deli we went into in America.
Someone shat on a piece of bread and put another piece of bread on top of it. That's what we ate. For a breakfast, yeah. I might add.
I bought an apple and then just spat in it to clean it. That's how we roll.
Anyway, sorry, back to the story.
So anyway, they're on site, huge production. Every day, all involved were fed breakfast, which was the same as a full hotel breakfast selection. Then lunch, which was great again. Choice of starters and two main course, desserts, etc., teas, coffees, snacks floating about all day for everyone.
I'm ringing the manager.
Every hotel and B&B in the area was booked out for the crew and the staff. Anyway, I was with the stunt crew, all Irish lads, who were feckin' mental to say the least. Their day consisted of building a landing zone out of cardboard boxes and crash mats at the bottom of a cliff, then fucking themselves off the cliff, or if not doing that, hanging in a harness from the crane I was driving, 60 feet in the air and pretending to fly. And all for €100 a day. And I'm looking at this cliff. It must be in Fenor and Clare somewhere. There's a big, about 20-foot drop there. And the boys have built, there's a bit of scaffolding and then a load of cardboard boxes and then the mats that you would have had doing PE in school.
And your man crash mats.
Yeah, your man is there dressed up as a Viking, leaping off the top of it.
Wild man.
That's the easiest €100 you'll ever make.
Another listener said on the topic of actors, well, more just a story about actors. A good mate of mine is the son of Irish actor Liam Cunningham.
Yeah, we know, man. Game of Thrones and all.
Yeah, he was on Tommy Tiernan Show night. We were on it, yeah. My friend said he came downstairs one night and his dad was playing Mario Kart with Michael Fassbender.
Yes.
Fucking wonder what it'd be like to be like friends with a celeb son, like. You see some cool shit, like.
Yeah.
Who would you like to be friends with now?
I don't know. It's just someday I hope to be a celeb.
Yeah, when we grow up. Yeah,
and have my own famous friends. Do you know what? I'd love to be friends with Michael Fassbender. I think he's the coolest, one of the coolest Irishmen out there at the moment.
Yeah.
Do you remember the ad, the Guinness ad, where he swims to America?
Yeah.
And then he gets out the other end and he just walks into a bar in New York and goes up to your man and says, sorry. And then your man hands him a pint of Guinness.
Yeah, there you go. Recovery.
Yeah.
He knew more about, never mind the scientists, oh, glycogen levels. He swam the whole way to New York. And what do you do for recovery?
Pint.
There you go.
I thought your man should have given him a cut of a sandwich or something.
You could give him a bit of fucking an old ham and cheese toastie or something, yeah.
We were talking about nursing home antics, and another listener has said, I work in a nursing home at the weekends, and you're right to say there's a fair bit of jockeying going on.
Aye, aye.
Been working there just over a year now, and there's a younger man, well, when I say younger, he's in his 60s, and an older woman in her 80s, who are at it the whole time. I couldn't believe it when I was first told, until I walked in on it. Mick goes down to her whenever he gets the horn, usually just after lunch. He has a quick fag, and then it's off to her room. Anne's door does be slightly ajar, been holding it slightly open. I knocked one day, heard nothing, and went in and saw what I can never unsee. They've Jesus. Been given a do not disturb sign for their doors with two love handles interlocking on it, two love hearts interlocking on it.
Cowboy hat on the door. Don't come a knocking.
Although they never seem to bother using it, much to the staff's dismay. There's also a picture of her late husband right above the chair she sits on.
The bastard.
I've often walked past and seen him standing there in front of her with his pants down.
Not the husband, though. He's in the picture. It's obviously, it's obviously the other lad, the other jockey. Jesus.
See, your man in the picture has his pants up, like.
Just a photo above her bed of her late husband with his, with his bollocks out. She's genuflecting in front of it.
Jesus was a great one. I do the cleaning, and there's often days that I skip her room. Oh. If the door is any way closed, I ain't going near it. Their families have been told about it and all. Can't imagine what the phone call was like. We also have a resident who has a Tom Hank every morning before breakfast.
Huh. Good start to the day.
Start to the day. I'm delighted that there's a couple there in their 60s and 80s and they're still going at it. I have to say, close the door.
Yeah.
Ah, come on, this isn't prison. You can close the door.
I hope the guy in his 60s, you know, is worthy of being in a nursing home.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what I mean? I hope it's he's not gone to, like, his kids. Any chance you put me in a nursing home, I have a wicked fucking horn on me, and I tell you, staying at home on my own, it's no good to me. Throw me, like, you know.
He's 62. Do you reckon they rang him one day to, like, fix a leak in the boiler?
Yeah, he went in, just said, I'm fucking cleaning up in here. I'm cleaning up. He put on a fake lip. Later on, he had a stroke.
Had to be fucking dug out of her.
He went in to fix a leak. Told everyone then. PJ, is that leak fix? He's like, huh? I'm fucked now. Leave me in here. Fucking plenty everywhere.
Imagine me the only, like, able-bodied lad in the nursing home.
You'd be wore out. You wouldn't be able-bodied for long, it's a fucking wrecked.
But you reckon the old ones at that stage would be loose, they'd loosen up a bit. It would say, like, you couldn't be in a relationship.
I don't know. What do you mean loosen up?
Morally.
Okay.
Not getting the 3-in-1 out.
Yeah, they probably would morally. Yeah, I'd like, imagine so. They're like, well, I'm going to die anyway. Fuck it. Like.
Yeah, I don't mind if you're tapping the one in room 204. As long as you tap me as well. You know what I mean?
So basically now what we've uncovered here is that the nursing homes, like, it's going to be a prime time investigate. Swinging homes.
Like the Olympic Village.
Lads, the staff are just going in, like, just hosing lads down, like, they're fucking wrecked. The unable bodied lad's just gone in.
Does he go around with a defibrillator?
They're fucking dipping him, lad. Dipping him.
Wash him down in Dettol. Right, next room, go on.
On hospital trips, Stephen emailed. A few years ago, I was backpacking around Australia. I was in this pub on my first beer of the night, so I was sober. Went to take a piss in the jacks, stood up on the little step in front of the piss wall. I had an old pair of runners on and the sole was hanging off from the heel to the middle of my foot. I hadn't got a penny to spend on clothes, but somehow always had the price of a pint. Anyway, as I was finishing up, I stepped back off the little step and I stood on the sole of my shoe, which was hanging off, and I lost my balance. I fell back, cracked my head off the wall in the jacks, blood everywhere. Went to hospital to get a couple of stitches, thinking I'd be in and out in a few hours. Anyway, because it was a head injury and it was a pretty deep cut, they kept me in overnight to get a CAT scan in the morning. This nurse in her 50s wheeled me down to the CAT scan room the next morning. Then 5 nurses took over to move me from my trolley to the CAT scan trolley. I'd say not one of them was over 25. Everyone left the room and they explained to me what was going to happen next. As I lay there on my own in this room, I thought to myself, fuck, all them good looking nurses are going to see everything when I'm in this machine. So I started playing with the little lad. hoping to get him on a bit of a semi to try and impress them. Next thing, over the intercom, I hear, "Stephen, can you take your hands off your penis, put your arms down by your side?" It would take a lot for me to get embarrassed, but fuck me, I couldn't get out of the hospital fast enough after that. They were in bits laughing at me when it was over. Scan went grand in the end. Got 7 stitches in my head and a red face from the embarrassment of my troubles. My God. I can I sympathise with him a bit there.
You would want to impress these nurses you don't know.
Yeah, you don't want anyone to think you've a minuscule.
But the risk of being caught pulling yourself off inside the CAT scan machine.
Yeah, I'd probably been like, "Oh, can I go to the toilet first?" Like, came out then. An absolute wang.
Is everything okay, nurse?
I can't fit in the CAT scan. Like, they're trying to like reverse, you know, they reverse you into those machines like them.
You have to go in feet first. It's like the aerial and the car going into the car wash.
Someone can't screw it off.
Well, you were talking to an actor who said that for sex scenes, you have to tape it to the side of the leg.
Pin it, yeah, pin it. Fucking pin her, man.
Not with a pin, I mean.
No, with tape.
To strap it, like in a holster.
Yeah, I think there's a special, we're talking about that.
There's a lad holder, isn't there, that the actors wear?
Yeah, it's like a knickers, but it pulls everything back real tight. Like.
You're like an action man?
Yeah.
So that's for when you're having a sex scene. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Blaming it on the drink and the boogie. Luke got in touch, said, "I was at Damien Dempsey in Vicar Street concert December 2018. The gig was supposed to be over at 11 and I would be back on the midnight bus to Waterford for work at 8 a.m. Christmas Eve." Really, Luke?
Oh.
Really?
Yeah, I can see where this is going.
Well, the gig ran over and at 11:30, Finbar Fury came out playing the Lonesome Boatman and I froze. No way you can leave a gig like this. Turned to the lads in Jordan Belfort style and said, "I'm not leaving." Fast forward to the end of the night. I missed the bus. We got a taxi to Balbriggan to go to the nightclub. In the taxi, I had to write out a text to my head chief explaining I missed the bus.
Chef.
What, is this lad one of the Apaches? Is he? How Sitting chief. Bull will not make Waterford. I text my head chef explaining, "Sorry if that's racist, I missed the bus and wouldn't be able to go down." I asked the taxi man, who was from Japan, if my text made sense. He said it did. I said, "Grand, I sent it." And chief replied. The chef replied, "Get the 7 a.m. bus." I partied the night away to the nightclub and I only got to bed at 7 a.m. Never mind getting on the bus. I left it all calmed down until the 27th, got the bus down to Templar's and walked down to work. He just met me at the door with my envelope of tips and said, "You're fired." Long story short, Finbar Fury got me sacked. Did he really?
Finbar Fury's got a lot to answer for.
Up to no good again. I told you the one in Care.
What was that?
John quit his job at the Butchers over wanting to go see Pantera in Dublin.
Oh, yeah.
There was a gig, Tattoo the Planet. It was like Pantera, Slayer, Biohazard. All these American bands were coming to do the Tree Arena,
right,
as it is now.
Okay.
And I think it was on a Wednesday. So he said, "Hey man, I need Wednesday and Thursday off to go to this gig." And the Butcher, who of course from Limerick, was with, "I need you here, cut meat. You'll have to be here now, young fella. You can't have the day off." And he quit.
Quit to go to the gig?
Yeah.
Must have been some gig.
He was in the fourth year of his apprenticeship. And he quit to go to the gig. And then do you know what happened? 9/11. And the gig was pulled. And he was after quitting.
Way.
And then when it was rescheduled to a month later, the headline band were from America and they didn't come. So he quit the job for nothing.
These are the inches.
Rock and roll, man.
Oh, man. Andy emailed. "I used to finish work early on a Friday, a few hours ahead of the lads. So I went straight to the pub as I was still hanging from the night before. Thursday night was ladies' night in the nightclub, so we never missed it. I'm in the pub a few hours reading the paper and a few of the lads come in later than expected. I'm half cut as I'm only topping up and they inform me they were going to the pictures in a bit to watch The Hurricane with Denzel Washington. A couple of pints later, we're ready to go." Who goes to the cinema after a fucking flake of pints?
I don't know.
Jesus. This is crazy. But this... Andy says, "I'm drunk at this stage, so we get there and get settled in the seats, and after a while I need to use the toilet. It's dark and I'm drunk, so I can't find the exit. I'm shouting up to the lads, 'How do I get out?' I'm nearly opening a fire door exit at this stage. After a lot of shouts of, "Shut up, it's that way," I find my way to the toilets. While in there, I fall asleep for a bit and I wake up even worse. I'm all over the place. So I head back into the cinema after stumbling around looking for my friends and my seat. Eventually, I'm told to pick a seat and shut up by many a patron. It's cool. I'm fine now. Have a seat. Unfortunately for me, I'm now watching Erin Brockovich. I realise, best not to move and upset everyone again. I'll wait till the end. The end was me being woken by ushers and cleaners. The film was over. The place was empty. I've no money, no phone, no jacket.
Oh.
I stumble home after a long walk and wake up the next day to the heavily pregnant girlfriend asking, how the hell did I go missing when going to the cinema? I must have been with someone. After a lot of explaining, she finally believed me and I've never had pre-cinema drinks again.
Man, you know in Australia you can get like draft beer in a glass going to the cinema.
I think in Cineworld in Dublin you can get
a pint,
can you? A pint and wine and stuff anyway, yeah. Do you know it down on Parnell Street?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Because if that was everywhere in Ireland, 100% we'd abuse it.
Cinema be pumping here, lad.
Imagine like the end of Titanic, Jack and Rose are dying and someone's like, he's drawing the picture of her. Get your tits out. Yeah. Oh, lads would abuse it.
Man, do we know like film showing? Just a load of lads going in tanked up, just having more beer. Like, do I turn off the film? No one's no upon it. Will you put on a bit of music there? Yeah. Just a load of lads going wild in the cinema room. Do. Turn off the fucking film.
On trash talking at games, David said, I remember one of Wexford's well-known hurlers, John Quigley of the famous Quigley brothers. He was coming to the end of his career. He was playing corner forward, marking a young corner back who was full of spunk and dreams.
Sometimes they go hand in hand.
Yeah, normally the dreams gets the spunk out of you. But John knew he would be in for a tough day if he didn't do something early in the game. Anyway, the ref blew the whistle before the game started for a minute's silence. It was for the death of a clubman. At the end of the minute's silence, the young lad shook John's hand and asked, "Who's the minute's silence for?" And John replied, "You." The young lad didn't hurl a ball for the day and had to be taken off, as John was known as a physical hurler, to say the least.
Oh, I love that.
Bye, John, bye.
Kevin said, the owl fella told me he was doing umpire the match once and heard the full back giving the full forward plenty of stick about riding his mother the night before. The other umpire walked out and laid the young lad out, told him not to be talking about his wife like that.
It's called in there.
That's brilliant. Mickey Mara gave us a really good one before from New York now about trash talking. I can't think of it now.
I can't remember.
I'll have to check on WhatsApp.
I remember hearing that the Gard in Care sure was over the footballers. And he was trying to get Matty to come football training, and Matty was playing the hurling at the time, said he was too busy. And the Gard, Matty was driving an old tractor, and he pulled him up there by the blockyard. And he pulled him in and said, "You know, you've no lights now on the tractor and that indicator isn't working, and I'd say the tax is probably out of date and the whole lot." And Matty's going, "Oh, Jesus, yeah, yeah, yeah." And the Gard writes him out a ticket, you know, and he hands it to him. And as Matty drives off, he opens the ticket from the Gard and it says, "Football training 7 o'clock Tuesday."
That's fucking brilliant. That's brilliant.
Now.
Oh, come on. Let's have this out.
More, that grass that farmers cut up, what do you call it?
Sullage.
Well, could you repeat that?
Sullage.
Sillage.
Teresa, who pronounces it Trasa, here we go, was in touch. "I live in Waterford and I have never heard somebody say silage the way Mara does. So I found this quite strange. No offence, Mara. Anyway, today I was out on a walk. I finished the latest podcast and I needed something to listen to. And I've been listening from the start again. So I picked up on episode 17, Saipan and Silage. Not long into the episode, I noticed something strange. Mara speaks of the time her father ate 21 spuds after doing silage," which she pronounced silage, basically the right way of saying it, in comparison to the way she says it now. So what I'm getting at basically is, Mara, you used to say silage, and now you're saying silage. Mara, what's the story?
I've been living at home because of lockdown for the last year and a half, so my accent has reverted to its natural state. Okay, So, like, well done, lads. 166 episodes and you finally have something over me. I hope he's a
yes. Come on. Maura, you are like a language chameleon. It's like, if you spent a couple of weeks in Cork, you'd be like, come on, boys, we're doing silage. Kid, start up the tractor.
Mystery topic, girl. Yeah. Maura has a lovely speaking voice. But my favourite thing that you say, Maura, is if you were to ring a hotel and book a room, how would you pronounce it?
Book.
Book.
Book. Book. Yeah. That's the one.
When I used to work in News Talk, George Hook hated the way I pronounced his name. It's like, Hook. It's like, yeah, George Hook. Anyway.
George Hook has a book. James wanted to weigh in on this as well. He said, I'd like to clarify that people in Mead pronounce silage properly. Obviously, James is speaking for the whole of Mead here. I don't think I've ever been more triggered by anything than the way Maura says silage. It could be due to the fact that she's from North Mead, which is a bit, let's just say, sweet home Alabama, if you get what I mean. So that's what James said, Maura. Is that a slight on North Mead?
Oh, yeah.
James, you know, I can find out where you live. I can go back through the correspondence. So, you know, no mug for James. Sorry.
It'll be like a Mead accent just going, I have a particular set of skills, Kia. Yeah. I'll find you and I'll book you.
Can I just say, people did text in to my defence. And it seems to be a particular thing in the triangle of Kingscourt, Carrickmacross, Parts of Louth and the very tip of North Mead that we say silage.
What's that they call the place where everything disappears?
The Bermuda Triangle.
The silage triangle. So everybody else outside of the silage triangle pronounces it silage. So they, at least we've settled that debate.
Some people way out west say silage. Like,
that's bullshit. You've made that
no,
up.
No, I got a couple of voice notes from Donegal people. Who say, get Donegal lads, get the voice notes in again. Sorry.
What's the silage?
Yeah, so and then instead of saying committee, they say the committee.
Committee.
Oh, Christ almighty. Right, who's getting the Two Johnnies podcast mug sponsored by KSC Sports, who sell all the lovely Two Johnnies merch at twojohnnies.ie, kscsports.ie for all of that, if you want to get your hands on it. Who's getting it? I've got some good stuff in.
Maura, who do you like for the mug?
I think it has to be David's message about that iconic piece of trash talk about the minute silence.
Yeah, I do like that one. It's always nice to send a mug to Wexy as well.
Okay, commiserations to the man who fell asleep in the
cinema. Yeah, that was really good. Like, in fairness,
be condoning that type of behaviour.
We've condoned fucking worse
than this thing. Jesus Christ.
Okay, right. Okay, yeah, okay.
I also like your man tapping himself in the old CAT scan machine.
Yeah, come on.
Can I just say, not one nurse was looking at your Mickey. Like, not one nurse. I don't know why men have this perception. It's like,
yeah. If you want to hear about my grape Mickey, you can go and check out the extra podcast where I went to way too much detail.
Oh, Jesus, yeah. If you haven't already signed up for the extra podcast.
Oh, sorry, who's getting the mug?
Who's getting the mug? Give it to him, so, come on.
David.
Right, okay. David, in Wexford, you have won this week's mug. So get in touch, Maura. We'll write up the docket. We'll get that mug out as quick as we can, son. Right, weekly roundup, John. What's been going on this week?
People wonder what's going on. We've been writing straight hits.
Fucking hit records, man.
Hits only from now on. We ain't playing.
There was a demo sent to me the other day, and I listened to it 18 times in a row. That's how good it was.
Yeah. And it was
by us.
Yeah, it was by
us. You know what I mean? It wasn't Bruce Springsteen or anything like that. He wasn't sneaking in here, you know, in a denim jacket. Just singing.
Yeah, so that's what we've been up to. People will be wondering, what are we at? But we'll be writing and recording songs here, so.
Also this week, we got some good news on the TV front.
Are we allowed to announce that?
I don't know if we're allowed to announce it, but I just
doubt kinda it. Just
no. No. I've alluded to it. We got some good news. That's all. Listen, don't sue me. We got some good news.
You know yourself, listeners. Yeah, come you on know yourself.
Put two and two together.
If you haven't signed up for our extra podcast, what are you doing with yourself? What's your deal?
What's this guy's deal?
On last week's extra podcast, number 56, we were discussing the worst jobs in the world, and poor Johnny Smacks details a horrific injury he suffered. while doing a bit of manual labour.
Oh, hard work.
Strimming the hedge, being out in the weather.
That's bad for a job.
Dangerous jobs, boring jobs.
Not to interrupt there, no?
Yes, go on, interrupt.
I was obviously out doing a bit of, as I mentioned on the other podcast, bit of gardening. Windburnt, lad. I got windburnt Saturday. Not joking. I've two red roses. I've been using a bit of SPF now, moisturiser since. Going down a treat. Skin's looking particularly good.
How long were you outdoors working?
Well, I wasn't out there 2 hours, lad. Windburnt. Two cheeks. And I could tell because, you know the tightness you get when you get, like, you know, sunburnt.
Okay.
It was like that, but I was like, it couldn't be sun. There was no sun. I got windburnt. My skin wasn't used to the elements of being outside.
Do you feel like a deep sea fisherman now, coming back ashore?
I said to Annie, like, we're going to have to go back here 18th century job. That's the early 1900s. For those of you listen, I was like, I'm after doing a day's work. Now, where's my dinner? She said, you done 2 hours work. I've been out there since 7 this morning. I said, good deal. Yeah, it was grim, but sorry, that was just outdoor work, not for me. Our guest today is a radio presenter, drummer, a dad, a middle-aged skateboarder, and a member of the under-12 East Limerick GAA football team that beat Cahir Conlish in a final. Welcome to the Two Johnnies podcast, Dermot Whelan.
A boy the kid!
A boy the kid!
Let's get up to Treaty!
He's got his Limerick top on and everything, loving it. That's a fantastic start.
Limerick man in Dublin, how are you surviving?
Oh, you know, I send money home. That's the best. That's all we can do. Thanks for reminding me of my under 12 GAA prowess. I'd forgotten that I had reached such heights. Yeah. I remember got a big tub of fizzy jellies after the final.
Oh,
unforgettable.
Man.
Still buzzing from it. Yeah.
It all just goes downhill from there.
Keeping the family in gravy chips at home. Yeah.
Yeah.
you got a new book out. Congratulations.
Here it is.
Look at that. You must be loaded at this stage now. Look. Andy's on the radio.
Yeah. Love that. Down here now, that'd be just showing off.
You've written a few books. You know no one's getting loaded out of these.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. When I told my mother I had a book deal, I think she thought like I had instantly turned into Niall Horan. I had to like remind her, this isn't how it works. You can't get a new house. I wish.
Man, you've got a fair mad journey to get to where you are. So people know you now. You're doing Dermot and Dave on Today FM, doing great work, kicking ass, live tours, stand-up comedy, TV shows, all that. And it all started when you left school and you did archaeology.
Yeah, crazy days. The crazy life of an archaeologist. I saw Raiders of the Lost Ark when I was 11. And I just thought Indiana Jones was the coolest thing I'd ever seen. So I thought I should study archaeology because that's probably what it's like. You know, just amazing adventures, fights with Nazis. I know it's all out there for me.
Wearing man bags. How wonderful.
Sean Connery adopts you.
Yeah. Using a big whip. But I realized very quickly that it's actually not like that at all. You're just essentially sitting in a ditch in the rain. Waiting for the day to end. Like, it's not Raiders of the Lost Ark by any means. Like, and also, Indiana Jones was technically the worst archaeologist who has ever worked. Like, he makes no record of anything.
Yeah.
Has absolutely no respect for the people who actually own the place. You know, the ancient tribes, just fires on in there, actually kills some of them on the way in. And then, like, grabs what he wants, doesn't make any drawings, no maps. He doesn't look through those little quantity survey things that archaeologists have to do. I don't know what they're called. And then every time he leaves a bit. What?
A kaleidoscope. It's just different colours. Yeah. Looking. He got it free in a box of cornflakes, Indiana Jones. Like, oh, wow.
Imagine he found the Ardagh chalice. He just kickbox fucking booted into the van.
Yeah, it would. And he would have, like, just shot the farmer and his son who owned the field, legged it out of there. But, yeah, and every building he leaves, it collapses. So, like, absolute destruction. He's a terrible archaeologist. We would have kicked him out of the union if we'd had a chance.
Imagine he goes to visit the Book of Kells. You know, it's just rubble on Dane Street. Yeah. Come here to me. And how did you end up on radio? Was it 98 FM? Where did you start?
Yeah, I started actually in a station called Anna Livia FM, which isn't there anymore. Or it's called, I think it might be called Dublin City FM now. But at the time,
it's not it your fault in, that it's not there, though, is it? No.
Well, I don't know. That's up for debate. But it was in a shed, which is being kind, in the grounds of Griffith College in Dublin. And I just always wanted to work in radio, and I'd worked in film as a as an assistant director, which sounds really impressive, but basically I made tea for actors. And I did that for some of my 20s, and I thought I wanted to get into radio. So this place, I could do a really good impression of a newsreader. So I went into this station and said, I want to work in the radio. And I'll never forget, I went in there and the station was run by a woman who basically did everything. All the jobs in the station she did. And one of her roles, as well as managing the entire station, was reading the news. Except it wasn't like, at 4 o'clock, here are the headlines today in Iraq. It was, she would sit in a radio studio and open up the Irish Times and would then basically say mammyisms for about 5 minutes, and then it would be over. So it was like, oh my God, would you look... look at who he is now. Hmm. That's trouble for them now. What's going on there? Sacred Heart. Cripes. What are they up to in Afghanistan? So it was essentially that. Just you would read little bits of the Irish Times. So when I came in, like, basically, you know, the job was mine. It was there for the taking. She's like, you want to be a newsreader? Great. That's one less thing for me to do. And now I could just focus on, you know, the rat traps out the back. So I started reading the news, which I then used to steal off the 98 FM website, which I later realized was only updated every few days. So my news was like at least 3 days old. But but boy, did I sound good, because I could do a really good newsreader's voice.
Your newsreader's voice.
It's 6 o'clock. Here are the headlines. Top temperatures today of 8 degrees. There'll be a light breeze from the south. More in an hour. Back to the music.
Man, you're definitely double jobbing in Today FM. They're definitely like, we're going over to Jim with the news, and then it's just
it's you with a hat on.
Fake mustache.
Radio, it's unnecessary. Yeah. It just helps you get into it.
And like, after you made the move from The Shed to 98 FM and stuff, and obviously you're going well, is that when you met Dave in 98 yeah. FM? Or yeah.
Yeah, well, I worked in 98 FM for 2 years in news. So I was like a reporter. I was a courts reporter. Like, I was so bad because I knew nothing about current affairs. Like, I was slagged in school for how little I knew about the world. And then suddenly I'm telling everyone about the world, but I know nothing. I remember, like, John Duggan is a sports. Like, this Today FM sports guy, head of sport. And at the time, he was in sport with me in 98 FM, and I remember asking him, "John, who's the minister for finance?" And he's just looking at me like at his computer, going, "Who is this idiot?" Like, and I said, "Is it Rory Quinn?" "No, he's in the opposition." And I was like, "What does opposition mean?" He's like, "Jesus Christ, how did you get in here?" And then I remember doing a court report in my first live thing from the four courts, and it was a big one for the lunchtime news. And you know, they're going, "We're going to be going live to you." And I was like, "Yeah, yeah." And it was this unbelievably complicated European Investment Bank court case, which I did not understand. And I had whatever I had could understand written on notes. And so they go, "We're going to cross live now to the four courts, where our Dublin reporter Dermot Whelan is at the courts. Dermot, what's the latest from the investment bank case?" "Well, Tina, the court heard that it..." And the wind blew all my notes off the roof of a car out into the traffic on the keys. And it was like a cartoon with all the pages flying around in the traffic, like, "Rawr!" And I was like, and the judge and the Supreme Court, the "back to you in the studio." I'll never forget it. I just have my head and my hands going, that's it. But the great thing about radio is you can, like, generally, it takes a lot, you know, to really mess up. So, you know, back at the next day, they've forgotten because there's another bulletin to do and, you know, you're there, so they'll use you again.
And then they said, well, this guy, he's got talent. Let's give him the most important show on the station.
Well, I used to use the newsroom at night when my shift was over to make fake bulletins because I used to love shows like Not the 9 o'clock News and Brass Eye and all that. So I used to put on voices and use the computers in there to make these fake bulletins. And then I started doing little sketches just to amuse myself, characters and things like that. And one of the late night talk show guys, a chap called Niall Boylan, who was on at the time, who's still she's still doing radio. He gave me these little, you know, put me on his show doing comedy bits. So from there, then I ended up moving into the breakfast show. But yeah, myself and Dave were put together in this most hideous, like he was in, it was so weird. They rang him up and said, will you come into 98FM? We want to test you out for something. And he's like, okay. And they brought him in another entrance. So he didn't even know. Actually, yeah, he didn't even tell him that he was in a radio station because we were in the building next door. So he came up and he was sitting there. And then they brought me in and I sat down. And they basically put us together like a really shit play date. You know, when you're a kid and your mother would bring you over like to her friend's house. You're like, oh, God's sake. You love it. Her daughter is the same age as you. Play with her. It was like that. And then we started chatting and then they kept sticking their head in the door going, how are you getting on? And we're like, great. And he still didn't even know. I had an idea that it was for the new breakfast show, but he didn't even know why he was there. So, and then we bonded over an Alan Partridge impression. He started doing Alan Partridge. And then I started doing Alan Partridge. Aha! And then we became friends.
Oh, man.
Then it gave us the breakfast show. But it was so awful because, I don't know, well, it's like they all had like, I don't know, an episode or something. Because all the rules of radio seemed to get thrown out. So we decided, I was a drummer, he's a guitarist. We'll just play all our own jingles live. And they went, that's a great idea.
Wow.
So I had a drum kit beside the mic. And we go like, I remember we had this sketch called Business News. It was Anto's Business News. And Dave was going, all right, the price of hash has gone up by 50%, man. All right. And so we'd play the jingle. And I remember like, Business News, Business News. And then he would do that bit. I don't know how they let us do that. It was terrible, like. but we just kept doing it then. And eventually, there was another girl. It was Dermot, Dave and Aideen, who was this lovely girl. We got on like a house on fire. But she'd never done radio either. And she was an actress. And I wasn't used to radio. I remember our first day on air. She was doing traffic and it went like beep, beep, boop. It's traffic news. Look across the city, getting you to work on time. Over to Aideen for the traffic. And she just went and got like stage fright and then just hid under the table.
No,
no.
So she just got onto the floor and hid under the table. And we were like, oh, okay, well, I guess there's no traffic news then. So unfortunately, then she moved on. And then it was myself and Dave. And sure, that was 18 years ago now.
Wow. Jesus.
Oh my God.
Do you ever get sick of each other? Just asking for a mate.
You know, guys, you know, there's a really deep bond.
Oh yeah.
Sometimes you annoy the shit out of each other. There's no doubt about it.
You got the big move then to the FM. Was that like, you know, going from the Championship into the Premier League? Did you have to think twice about it? Or was it like, right, we're going in, straight in now. Lovely. How much?
No, okay. Like, where do we sign? no, I think, look, we were ready for, we were in 98FM for well over a decade. So we were ready to do something different. And the idea of our show going national and being bigger, you know, who wouldn't take it, you know? And the lunchtime slot was actually a great one to start in because it was a little bit like there was a bit of freedom in there. You could just play tunes and have a bit of crack and a lot of the characters kind of came out of that time. So like the Noni character that I do came out of there. And
yeah, did you ever...
Sony Cascarino as well.
did you ever...
What, Matt? That's the thing. You know, Tony Cascarino has had media training because obviously somebody along the way told him that you've got to say the name of the presenter over and over again. So that's why he says, Matt, that's right, Matt. I think the thing about Liverpool, Matt, is that they have a real chance to win the league, Matt. And what I counted in one interaction with Matt, he said, Matt, 38 times. And this is in less than 5 minutes. Like, that's got to be some kind of record.
Have you ever met Tony Cascarino?
One day when I was doing Tony Cascarino on the show, I didn't know, but he was in the building and they'd arranged for him to come in. So he walked into the studio as I'm going, oh, it's Tony Cascarino. And he goes, all right, Matt. And he came in the door. And so we're Tony talking to Tony. He said, I don't say Matt all the time, Matt. Yeah, you do, Matt.
He took it well anyway.
He did take it well. And in fairness, most people take it well. I remember doing, God rest him, Jack Charlton was in studio one time with us. And he's a new big Jack. All right, Jack. And we played a game called Jack versus Jack. And basically, we asked questions where the answer to every question was Jack. And to answer, you had to say Jack, real Jack or fake Jack. Yeah. So, fairness to him, like, he managed to get through it, and he was laughing his way through. But at one point, he wasn't even sure who was talking because he could hear me. So, all right, Jack, and he just had this confused look on his face. But yeah, he was a lovely man, and it was lovely to be able to share a studio with him.
Before we move on to the book and stuff like that, we have to ask you about Republic of Telly, because yes, that's to us the big one where we got to see you most, like, was in Republic of Telly.
That was class.
That was the glory period of Republic of Telly, if you like. Not to be blowing smoke up your arse.
And no disrespect to Simcard.
Yeah, you know, Simcard sound as well. But we do remember your period with happy memories, I suppose. Yeah. How did that come about?
It was very strange, actually. I was in Spain on my holidays and the producer, James Cotter, gave me a call and said, here, you know the show Neil was doing, Neil Delamere, Republic of Telly, do you want to be the presenter? I was like, okay. That was kind of it. I had written bits for Neil before. Like, part of that show, obviously, because it was such a big influence, a big part of it was slag and telly. It meant that there was a team of people watching TV shows all day, every day. So I had been that one of those guys who just, it was my job to just watch telly.
Fucking hell.
And try and write jokes.
I need that job.
Which is harder than you think. You just sort of, the worst thing is you're watching a show and you're thinking, okay, what's the funny here? What can I slag off? And then you just get into the program and then the next thing it's over. You're like, oh shit, I was meant to be writing jokes there. It was just a really nice show.
And like, do you think nowadays that we're missing a show like Republic of Telly? Obviously, there's loads of comics and comedians coming up, and that was a nice breeding ground for comedians in Ireland. And now we seem to miss that. It was
a bit of a bridge, wasn't it?
Yeah, and now it just seems to be fucking people just going for misery a lot over, like, the comedy, when particularly I think at this time we need comedy, we need to laugh. Jesus, that's what we need, like.
Yeah, it's strange. And even our comedians are doing more serious stuff. If you look at the Tommy Tiernan show, you know, a man traditionally associated with stand-up is, I know he's on the podcast recently, and like, he's brilliant at it. But it's funny that that's the shift that we're seeing. And I just think, I agree, I think we need more crack. You know, we need stuff that just isn't always analysing things and, or, you know, and always trying to say the right thing and just a bit of crack. Because, like, when you go to a pub, that's what, you know, in Ireland, that's what you do. And we're famous for the crack, but there doesn't seem to be that much of it reflected on our TV screens. And I was very sad when the Republic of Telly ended. Even if I wasn't on it, it still should have gone. And it was an amazing vehicle, as you say, for comedians. If you look at the Rubber Bandits, and there was Damo and Ivor, there was Handy Sandy, you know, brilliant Hillary, who went on to Young Offenders. Yeah. Her husband, Peter Foote, was working on Republic of Telly. He wrote and directed Young Offenders.
Young Offenders, yeah.
Bernard, like Jennifer. It's like the amount of acts that came through that was really exceptional. And it was something that was really important to us, that to bring in new talent and give them a platform to get out into people's homes, you know. So it became very difficult after a while, just in terms of writing jokes. Because we were sort of slagging off the same shows over and over again, it was like I was writing the same joke over and over again. So it became harder and harder to sort of keep it funny. So I kind of left when I thought, you know, I'd rather have left it on a high, you know, than just stick with it. So,
but is that just a restriction of that format, or do you think there's a way you could push the boundaries a bit, or what would you?
Yeah, I don't know. I suppose, I think looking back, maybe we could have done more to try and just develop it and keep it going. But I don't know, we all had a lot of different stuff going on. I was on the radio doing live stuff and all that as well. So I suppose, you know, it's like anything. When you look back, maybe you didn't appreciate it as much at the time, because it just isn't a show like Republic of Telly around, in many countries at all. So it was a very unique show. So you never know. Maybe it'll come back in the future.
Do you miss being called Marty every week?
Marty!
Oh, Marty! those lads were so funny. But, geez, the parties we used to have after the Republic of Telly were just brilliant. And because there was nobody in... It was Sunday night in RTE, so there was nobody there. So it was like... Like, do you remember nights in school where maybe you were doing a 24-hour fast or a... I don't know, some kind of Christmas vigil or something where you'd end up in school, or maybe a school play. You were in school at weird times of the day and weekends.
Yeah.
That's what it was like. Republic of Telly was like being in school, except all the teachers were gone and we were just running around the place, just going mad, having just great parties in the green room and everything. It was just brilliant.
You're not getting away with it like that. Yeah, me and the Rubber Bandits used to have great parties. The end.
I just realised as I was telling the story, I should probably not. I don't think I'd get away with giving any more details. But
this one time. Yeah.
Let's just say some people's outfits were tried on down in the wardrobe department for the crack. I can't name any presenters, but
all Tuberty's shoes were just cut up when he came in on the Monday morning. Fucking those guys have done it again. Dermot, we want to obviously get on and talk about the book. Just when we were doing research and reading bits of the books, it seems like you suffered a panic attack, and was that what kind of led you to go down the mindfulness route and to kind of, I suppose, look at everything you're doing and look at all different aspects? Because as you said, you were a very busy man, telly, radio, all that, touring. How did that all fit in? And man, can you tell us a bit about this panic attack?
Your first panic attack, you thought you were having a heart attack, was it?
Yeah, I was on my way to the Kilkenny Catlaughs Comedy Festival in 2007, and I was performing. I was only doing stand-up a couple of years at that point, so I was still very new and green and nervous. And I remember driving down, I was in my car, my brother-in-law with me, and I had a lot going on. I was like breakfast radio, gigs at night, you know, bits of telly, I had small babies at home. So it was a lot going on in my life, and I had just like no stress management skills. I was just like, adrenaline, pints, nicotine, yay, this is my health management system. So I was driving down.
You sound like a junior hurdler, yeah. Health management system.
So I was just driving down, and to me it felt like the invisible man just came in and sat on top of me. Like, it was this just pressure on my chest and my stomach, and it was like, God, I find it difficult to breathe. So I ended up pulling the car in, and yeah, I thought I was having like a heart attack, stroke, I don't know what was happening. And I remember I got my brother-in-law to ring my wife, because I thought, this is it, I'm checking out, I'm actually dying. But because I didn't know, but I was hyperventilating, and what happens if you do that, your oxygen carbon dioxide balance gets totally skewed up, which can make you go, parts of your body go into spasm basically. So my hands went up like a T-Rex. And I was trying to talk to my wife on the phone, but my jaw and my tongue had kind of locked in spasm as well. So when she answered the phone, all she heard was like, da, 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 da. So she's like, oh my God, like, you're drunk already. You only left an hour ago. But I was like ringing her to tell her that I loved her because I thought, that's it, I'm gone. So an ambulance arrived anyway. I got into the ambulance and they kind of took my pulse and all that. And then they went, here, you'll need this. And they gave me that bit of exceptional life-saving equipment known as a brown paper bag and said, breathe into that, you're having a panic attack. And I'd never had one before. Never, wasn't aware that anxiety was a thing. I didn't, you know, it wasn't something that ever affected me. I didn't think I was an anxious person. So then I was carted off to Kilkenny Hospital where they checked me all out. And I remember ripping off the stickers, you know, that they... the monitors are connected to you with, and then going into town doing two stand-up gigs, delighted with myself that I had like 10 minutes of new material about the panic attack that I had on the way down. Like, it's safe to say I learned nothing at that point. But it kind of stayed with me, you know, and that definitely was an incident that sort of made me think, all right, look, maybe stress, anxiety is a thing for me, so maybe I want to find something that I can... that can help me with that, that just isn't cracking pints. So eventually, about a couple of years later, I met a woman who had written a book, ironically, and she wanted me to MC her book launch. And I found out she was a meditation teacher in her spare time. So I said, well, look, why don't we do swapsies? I'll MC your launch if you just give me an hour of meditation training, because I think I might need something. I'll give it a shot. But like... you know, I've been using meditation for over 10 years and I've been a teacher for the last 3 years. But like, I was very dubious about it. I'm sure a lot of your, you know, listeners and viewers right now are going like, that all sounds very wanky to me. The old meditation thing, you know, and it did to me at the start. Like, I couldn't even say the word meditation. I was like saying to my wife, yeah, I'm just going upstairs. And I don't know what she thought I was doing.
Masturbate.
Up there, but, yeah. You've been in there a long time now and you're breathing very heavily. What's happening? But, you know, there was, I had the same preconceptions about it, that it's for like Californian hippie types, you know, I'm going to be chanting and eating hummus, you know, within minutes. You know, and it's not. I started to learn the science around it and was like, actually, this stuff really works. It, you know, it shrinks your amygdala. It makes that fear center in your brain shrink. So how can you continue to have the same amount of anxious thoughts that put you in the back of an ambulance? You know, maybe there's something in this. And that's kind of why I stuck with it and why I like teaching the simple techniques, because it's, you know, science tells us it works and there's no need to be all fluffy woo-woo and crystals and chakras about it if you don't want to be. You could just focus on these techniques that are used by, you know, the military and law enforcement. And except they don't call it, you know, meditation. They call it tactical breathing, which sounds way more manly. But, you know, whatever language, it's the same stuff. You just have to present it in a language that's accessible to people. And that's why I wanted to write the book, was because I'd read books on the subject that were either way too woo-woo, fluffy, spiritual stuff, or else they were written by... you know, neuroscientists, and it was like studying for a PhD trying to read the book. Yeah. So I wanted to just deliver the stuff that, you know, would help people be a little less head wrecked, maybe help them sleep a little better, help them be a bit more patient with, you know, the people that actually matter to them. But deliver it, you know, with a smile on my face and make them laugh and make it accessible. So that's what it's about.
So Dermot, do you meditate every day for a little bit, or what's your routine?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. So I'd meditate every morning. So I have a system that I use that my teacher taught me, lovely guy called David G. RPM, Rise, Pee, Meditate. So you get up, do what you got to do in the bathroom, and then you just do one of the exercises, like a guided meditation or one of the breathing techniques in the book. And you do it before you pick up your phone or before you check your email or look at a yet another Neffet news story. And you just do it in there, even if it's for a minute or two. And all you're doing is just setting your nervous system for the way you want it to be for the day ahead. And you're not just sort of rolling into the day and hoping for the best. You're actually going, no, okay, I'm gonna set all the dials to the way I want them, and then I'll go into my day. And it just, I found, just really settled me. You know, I was a lot calmer, a lot happier. I had less brain fog. I used to get, you know, I get less overwhelmed with all the stuff that I'm trying to do, and I can just see things a little bit clearer.
Do you have any tips for anybody who's going to consider starting meditation? I mean, I tried it during the first lockdown. because me missus was doing yoga, and then I was like, I'll try something. Like, so like I just put on YouTube and like typed in meditation, and then like I just found after like a couple of minutes I was like, oh, this is nice, and then I'd zone out. So just I'd completely start thinking of like random stuff or work or something. It was like, obviously you're supposed to, I guess, clear your mind to a certain degree, and then I obviously couldn't. Like, is there any tips or,
well,
you know, for
my
someone
biggest
starting?
Tip would be that idea that you have to clear your mind. Take that and throw it into the wheelie bin, because
okay.
That's the biggest misconception about it, and it's one that I'm always trying to tell people to reassure them. You don't have to clear your mind. Like, that's for monks who are in the Himalayas or yogis in caves. They've been doing it all their lives, okay? And then maybe they can clear their mind. But the rest of us are thinking, oh, jeez, I forgot to feed the dog. I never emailed your man. I should get rashers. Yeah. You know, there's nothing for dinner. I forgot to pick the kids up. Oh, God, that plant is dead. You know, like, my nose is itchy. My leg feels funny. You know, like, I forgot to record the match. Like, they're the kinds of things that are coming into our head. So we have 80,000 thoughts every single day, right? Those thoughts are going nowhere. In fact, we want them there because they're literally keeping us alive. The minute you have no thoughts, you're dead, okay? Yeah. So we're not going to get rid of all our thoughts. We're not going to clear our mind. All meditation is focusing on one thing. And when your mind wanders off, like happened to you, which it will, you just realized, oh, my mind has wandered, and then you bring it back to your breath or whatever you happen to be focusing on. And that could happen like 500 times in a 5-minute meditation. And that doesn't mean that your brain is broken or that, you know, there's something wrong with you or that you've more thoughts than anyone else. It's just like a tennis match between focusing on one thing, you know, and the ball just bounces from attention to distraction, attention, distraction, and that's it. So just because your mind wanders doesn't mean you're doing it wrong. And that's the big thing that I try and help people, that, you know, just because your mind is bouncing back and forwards, you know, that means, you know, it means it's working. You're doing it. That's what minds do. The more we do it, the more we train our mind to focus, but that's it.
One thing we've got to ask you, and I know Johnny Smacks is itching to, is you gave up the drink.
I gave up the drink for a year.
Okay.
Just before anyone thinks I'm no crack, please don't turn off.
There's a lad in the John Deere now after going, well, fuck this, it was going grand until now.
I didn't mind a bit about the Himalayas, but this is too fucking far now.
Yeah.
How did you get on?
Yeah, a few years back I decided, you know what, I'm just gonna, because I found myself hangovers, like, as you know, like, as you get older, your hangovers get harder. And I just found it harder and harder to deal with the effects of the drink, because I found it was making me more anxious, kind of just unsettled and just a little bit slightly negative. And I just thought, well, you know what? I'd love to see what I'm like without booze, and not just for like a week. I'm going to give it I'll have a proper run at it. So I did it for a year, and it was my experiment just to see, like, is it easy and is it worth it? So I do have a chapter in the book about that, that just the 10 things I learned from quitting booze for the year. So now at the moment, I would have the odd drink. What it did do was change my attitude to booze, in that I wasn't just doing it kind of mindlessly, just thinking, well, it's Friday, I'll just drink a bottle of wine because that's what I do every Friday. So, you know, I am a little, I suppose I'm a bit more mindful about it. So I would, if I do drink, it's for a really good occasion and it's with a really good mate. So that I just knocked all the casual, you know, you'd meet somebody in town for a quick pint because you hadn't seen them in a while, and then you end up having 7 and you have a hangover and you're not quite sure how that happened. You know, the magic pint that that turns into 7.
You only went out for a sandwich.
The magic pint.
So I suppose I would never say I'm a teetotaler because I'm just not, but I would drink occasionally, which is something that I thought I would never say because I was just not one of those people. I was just all in. Sure, my nickname was Round the Clock Ronnie because I would always be last man standing, you know. I'd be the last man to leave the party, always looking for more divilment, you know.
Oh man, what a change.
I suppose, you know, without going too deep on it, you know, there was probably a reason why I was round the clock Ronnie. I was obviously trying to just distract myself from whatever was going on in my head, you know, whatever little insecurities I had or whatever it was. And once I actually took a step back from the booze, what that does is that it clears the haze long enough for you to go, oh, right, yeah, maybe I'm not happy actually about that aspect of my job or my relationship or whatever happens to be going on in your life. It just sort of turns down the volume on the stereo long enough for you to think a little bit clearly. So I suppose in that time, I began to make, you know, peace with things about myself that maybe I had been struggling with but didn't really know. And then plus by the time I went back on the booze, then I was like, well, I don't need the alcohol to as an anesthetic like I used to, because I'm actually okay with myself a bit better now. So I suppose I don't find myself reaching for it like I used to in the old days.
Dermot, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much. And for the people out there, Dermot's book Mindful is out now. It's published by Gill Books and it's available in all good bookshops and online. His son, John Paul, recently celebrated his birthday and Noel congratulated him by pointing out that John Paul has seen more boxes than Jeff Bezos. It's time for Noel Furlong and it's time for Noel's News.
Noel's News! It's Noel's News!
I'm young for that.
Well, Noel, I tell you, can I? It's good to have you back. Paddy was in last week.
Did he tell you about the birthday party?
Well, if that's what you want to call it. Yeah, he did. He said something about it last week. All right. That's, you can't listen. You can't do that.
Well, you know, and I know, it was really a training session.
Yeah, I know you've confirmed it.
Well, we had some session, boy.
Did you?
They said I was past it. They said I was too old school, pulling on tires. I said, tires don't hit back. They were pulling on me. If they knock me over, they get to go home. And if I don't hit the ground, Fong will chase them in the Astra.
That is.
Yeah, but they're only under 9. So he stays in second gear.
Well, that's nice of him, isn't it?
And well, he'd be mad for road, you know. But like, no, in fact, no. No, all serious now. Like, if any young fella was struggling,
yeah,
no, I might throw a stone at him or something to get him going again, you know.
That's very nice of you, yeah.
We had, do you know the young lad, the Hallorans, didn't give me a hand, the ginger lad.
Yeah.
He have a neck on him like a bull. Do you know him? Tango Hammer. Do you know Tango Hammer? You do?
I know him to see him, man.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. He's like a fucking tree trunk of young fella. The big head in him. The mega mind, they call him. The big head in him. Yeah. He have a forehead like a solar panel, that fella. You know what I mean? You know the fella.
I know the
fella. You know the young fella. Tango Hammer, yeah. Well, we'd be trying to replicate the match conditions. Tango Hammer were doing the cones. And I'd play the roving role.
Okay.
So I'd walk around and when they weren't looking, I'd kick the legs out from under them. And they'd say, ah, no. I'd say, lads, it could happen in a match. It could happen in a match. What'll you do then? And then the keeper were going to take a kick out. And I'd boot the leg from under him.
The keeper?
Yeah. He'd go flying. And I'd say, hey, could happen in a match. You must always be ready, little one. And then young Davis got the ball and he stuck it in the net. Wide, I shouted. He was going mad. I said, hey, could happen in a match. What are you going to do then? So they'd get a bit flat then. They're too slow on the ball.
Yeah.
I got Fong to drive out in the Astra, out amongst them. And did you ever hear a coach say, if it don't come up first time, pull on it?
Yes, yes, I have.
Young lads don't listen. Wait till they see a grey Opel Astra being driven by a man who can't count past 7 and they're coming at you. You let fly. Who has the ball? Not me.
So Paddy Fong can't count past 7.
But sure, that's why we always had to play him in the backs. That's why we had to play him in the backs. Oh, it makes sense now. So he had no concept of speed limits. Yeah. They can't pull him over. Do you know what speed you were doing, Fong? 7? And the Bridgestone tire is absolutely smouldering. Smouldering. No, he drove around the field. Now it's dry. You know what I mean? It's dry, it'll be fine. But we play full length.
Even at under nine?
Yeah, now normally an under nine match would only be 40 or 50 yards.
Yeah.
Fuck that. We play full length. 150 yards of pure gold. So half of them can't even hit the ball.
The goals are massive. It's really tall goalkeepers.
They're not getting any smaller. You know what I mean? They'll grow into them.
Yeah.
I have a couple of lads who can't even hit the ball.
Oh, Shanny Mac.
The sides. They play out the sides. I have the good lads in the middle.
Oh, yeah.
They can drive it.
Yeah.
The bad lads, the sides. Right? Now, we're getting tight for numbers.
Okay.
Because some young lads have stopped coming training.
Oh, for God's sake.
Well, I can't imagine why.
I can imagine why. I think everybody listening can imagine why.
I call around to the houses a couple of times. What the fuck is going on? How are you doing?
That's young Cash. Do you know him?
Oh, if anyone knows Cash. Some people say I invented Cash. Where is she going? This lad's having a fucking episode. What are you doing with the camera?
He's going to have to send himself a get well.
Yeah, send yourself a get well card now. What are you doing with the camera? Fuck acting. Fuck acting is right. Man here trying to do the news. Brian, tell you, Brian Dobson never had to come up with this shit.
Poor Neil.
You're getting one last chance now.
Careful.
If that carrot is full, you're going out the fucking window now.
We're soaking diesel.
Whose job is it to empty the cards? That's the question. I'm tight for numbers.
Oh, well, I can't imagine why.
But young lads won't come. Some young lads haven't the stomach for training.
Okay.
I call around to the houses a couple of times. Now, most of the young lads, they run and hide or whatever. A few tears, you know, but that's young lads, right?
Because they think it's a birthday party.
Halpin's mother gave me an awful earphone.
Oh,
my son said you ran him down in an Astra. Look. I said, I'm trying to win a championship here. He came home with bruises on his shin. He said you kicked him with steel toe cap boots. I said, look, if he can't take an old fella drawing a boot on him, he's not going to last it under nine, sister.
Could happen in a match.
I said, you know what? He was only a bad cornerback anyway.
Oh, he did not say that to her.
His father was the same. Cornerbacks to Lottie. Them helpings. 10 generations of cornerback. And there wasn't one of them necky.
No.
I have great time for a necky cornerback.
Okay.
The dark arts.
Yeah.
The flick.
The flick, yeah.
The trip.
Yeah.
Pushing down the helmet over your man's eyes.
Yeah.
Hitting him across the hand on a cold day.
Yeah, pinch.
Studs down the back of the boot. Grabbing the ball. Grabbing his balls. Spitting in his ear. Biting his elbow. All, you know, you'd want to do your
research. Biting his elbow?
Huh? You'd want to do your research on a fella.
Yeah.
Is he left footed? Is he right footed? Have he a shimmy that he always does? Where does he work? What's his girlfriend's name? What's his mother's home phone number? You know? You'd want to find out what he had for breakfast and tell him you pissed on it. Find out his star sign.
Whoa.
This month, a tall, handsome stranger will enter your life and pull across your ankles. Maybe call around to his house, leave off a few bangers the night before. Shake him up.
Shake him up.
Shake him up. Let him know he's in a war. But most importantly, play your own game. Don't mind him.
Play your own.
Don't mind him. Play your own ball. Win your own square. And that's it.
Yeah, that's do your own bit. Yeah.
Do your own bit. Fellas used to try and rough up Fong.
Did they?
And try and rough him up. But you could bait him all day, he'd love it.
Yeah.
The harder the better. He's a pig to work. He's a pig, that man. I asked him to stack bales one day. He nearly reached the moon. It was like the spire above. Ryanair had to go around it. That's a fact. Nassar made him take it down.
Who?
Nassar. The space guys.
NASA.
An animal for work. Jeez. He's a pig. One time he was lambing for Leahy. You know, no one does lemon like Leahy does lemon, right?
Oh, and Leahy does great lemon, yeah.
Leahy loves lemon. Leahy loves lemon.
He does.
No problem for the Fong. He mad for work. Yeah. Well, let's say the ram was only after laving the load inside the sheep. Fong had it back out again, 6 kg lamb. Ready for the field. The vet never saw the bait of it. He used to do silage when he was young.
Mm.
Animal fork. Loved driving tractors. He went 9 days without sleep. Shot himself and all. Wouldn't come out of the cab. He wouldn't leave the cab. The fire brigade had to be called to cut him out. He didn't crash. He was just fucking stuck to the seat.
Oh, jeez.
That's a fact. And I swear, when he finally came out of the cab, I could hear the tractor saying, "No more." No more.
A tractor that talks.
Ah, animal fork. A pig fork, that man. The harder the better. Misery. 7. Huh?
Fatty 7.
In local news.
Yes.
The parents are starting to cop on to these birthday parties. How many Jimmies are in your class, son? Well, this week, the local news is, by a stroke of luck, our under-9 boys team have been selected to receive their vaccines. They got a call from the doctor. Hello? Congratulations, Mrs. Ryan. Your son Connor is getting his vaccine this Thursday at 7:30 in the GAA facilities. And then she said, what about my daughter? She've a medical condition. I said, she's no fucking good to me. He will be collected by my medical assistant, Dr. Fong, in the Astra ambulance. Please bring football boots and helmet. In case the child has a reaction, we can let him run it off in our new facility at the town end of the field. His booster shot is Sunday morning at 10 and the following Tuesday at 7 and Thursday at 8:30.
How many booster shots are you giving him?
Is it going to go on for years, I'd say.
Oh, that's brilliant. That's brilliant.
Yes.
You're breaking all the rules.
Well.
Championship.
Is championship. What is championship?
Championship.
Championship is championship. Championship. That's a fact. Yeah. Maureen, you're on the Lady Petrol.
I'm having a glass.
She would if she got it. Good luck.
See you later and all. Thank you. Warning. Warning number one. This woman's on the Lady Petrol. Warning number two. You may have been triggered by her pronunciation of silage, but she promises she's not going to say it anymore. All right. Maura, what's your mystery topic this week?
I'll just add that I have my bra unhooked as well. Best part of Whoa, Women's Day.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Sorry.
There's a fella after writing off a Massey.
No, we need you to start filming. Again, come on.
There's a man in a white van has just drove it into the side of Starbucks in Cashel there.
X-rated Zoom.
You ask any woman, what's the best part of your day? She will say, when you come home and unhook your bra. I just had a long day filming and telling poxy kids in Marley Park. It's like, get away, we're filming. So, you know.
Oh, man.
My patience was tried. Anyway, mystery topic, controversy.
Yes.
Lads, the word culchie, is it offensive? According to the people, it's Scrabble. It's offensive, right? Now, I would disagree with this. However, I have looked up the meaning of it. And according to the online dictionary that I found, it says that a culchie is an unsophisticated country person. Its derivation is from the Irish for cool on tea. The suggestion being that people come in at the back.
Back of the house.
Yeah. So, I'm wondering, do you think the word culchie is offensive? Because personally, I don't. I love being called a culchie. Because to me, a culchie is actually a streetwise country person. Like, there are other terms that, you know, I think are way more offensive. So, like, say Jackeen, which we, you know, call Dublin people are called frequently. That's a reference, apparently, to the Union Jack, suggesting, oh, you're a little bit English. Dulce, which is Dublin people living in Wexford, you know, parts of Meath, etc. I think that word was invented by Dave McWilliams.
Is Dulce offensive?
It's accurate. I don't know if it's... I'm not a Dulce, so I wouldn't know. Gobshite, bog trotter, sheep shagger. This sheep shagger is very offensive because I actually, before this podcast, had to go out to the field and turn a sheep up off her back. No, but I had to hold her because when your sheep goes in the back for a while, you know, you have to hold her for a little while so she gets steady back up. And it's just like, oh, like it was right beside the road. And it's like, oh, the young Faye, when she's out there in the field and she's a howled of a sheep, what is she doing?
Like, were you standing like behind the sheep, Mara? Like holding it like...
No, I was I was holding her from the side. But holding her from the back would have been very inappropriate.
That would have been worse, yeah.
Yeah, okay, other terms.
Side guard.
Yes, I had her in side control.
Side mount.
Yeah. Turf muncher, bogman, country bumpkin, hillbilly and redneck. So I'm wondering, what terms do you think are offensive? And do you think the word culchie is offensive? Do you think it should be banned from Scrabble?
No, we don't care about the word culchie. But being white, young men in the fit of our health, there are very few things in life that could possibly offend us. I've been called a culchie, but it's funny. We don't really use culchie in everyday speak. The only time the word culchie comes up is in interviews when people who aren't culchies ask us about being from the country. And it depends. It's like the word paddy. We'd say it about ourselves. Ah, sure, look, the paddy's like the crack. Paddy's like the music. Paddy's like the drink.
Yeah, but if an English person calls us a paddy.
If some lad with a clipped English accent, like if he was on a stag in Dublin and I met him and he was like, what, you a paddy? It might grate on you the wrong way. So it's all about the intent.
He's getting hammered.
Hammered, as they say in Wexford. So it's all about the intent. For me, I have been called a culchie by Dublin people because when I went to Dublin first, I had a culchie walk. And all my Dublin friends maintained that people from the country walk differently. Now, I maintain that farmers walk slightly differently. If you're wearing wellies 8 hours a day and then you come into town on a Saturday in runners or shoes, wearing wellies has got to affect your walk.
Yeah.
It's just a different walk when you wear wellies.
Deformed calves from wellies.
So, can I tell you a quick story about wellies, actually?
Yes.
My dad reckons that he has no hair on the backs of his calves because he wore wellies as a young fella. And also now he's a problem with his feet, so he's not going to be able to wear wellies around the farm anymore. So he's like debating what kind of boots he's going to wear. It's very like, it's traumatic for him. He's like, yeah, I can't wear wellies anymore. So it's like,
just, he'd have to get rigger boots or something, will he?
Yeah, steel toe boots, I was saying to him, or hiking boots or something like that. But
no,
I don't
risk
know.
Boots.
Yeah, I don't know what other kind of boots you could go into 6 inches of muck with, but sure, look at.
Yeah. Jeez, that's a mystery topic all by itself.
Them young ones on the adult channels have boots up to their knees, though, wouldn't they?
They're not fucking Dunlop wellies, lad.
They're probably not steel toe cat.
No, definitely not steel toe.
She's not doing the safe past that one. Has anyone ever called you a culchie and it grated you wrong?
No, never. Like, to me, a culchie is what you make of it. Like, to me, and I probably speak for Johnny as well, we're proud to be culchies. We would be like, yeah, we're culchies, like the culchie invasion. But we're like, and like, I kind of feel like all those culchies, anyone from outside Dublin, we kind of all feel like, well, we're all together. You know, because we're all culchies. So, like, when people see us on television or, like, you know, hear us on radio or whatever, they're like, that's great to hear someone from the country on.
Yeah.
So we're kind of like, we're culchie and we're proud. I don't find it offensive. We should take the term and be proud of it. Like, the term is what you make of it. Like, you know what I mean? In the dictionary it says unsophisticated person from down the country.
Who's running the dictionary?
Yeah.
Bet they're not culchies.
Exactly.
See these Scrabble boys?
Yeah.
Bet they're from a town.
City boys. Not a town now. But I think we're culchie and we're proud. I don't find it offensive. When we were co-hosting with Jennifer on the 2FM show, someone actually messaged in with a complaint saying that they found culchie to be derogatory. On air we couldn't say, you know, like we kind of told her to go away, but I can now say fuck off. Because this is our show.
Because it wasn't meant in a mean way.
No, it wasn't. Like, Jen meant it in a funny way. And that's like...
People from Dublin can see rural Ireland as a different planet.
Yeah. There's probably a country bias. or like, you know, biased to like biased those people from down the country.
I can understand it. Like, I definitely like. So I work in RTÉ, and there's a lot of Dublin people there, and you can definitely tell the difference between Dubs who spent their childhoods in Dublin, and then the Dubs who went down to the cousin's farm at the weekends or during the summer, because they just have that bit better of a perspective. And like, I kind of feel sorry for the Dubs who didn't get out into the countryside when they were younger, because they've really easy now. Missed out.
There's life outside the Red Cow.
Yes. Yeah.
I remember someone said that to us one day, like we were after doing something up in RTÉ or somewhere like that, and then someone was like, well, finally they figured out there's life outside the Red Cow, and it always just stayed with me, and I was like, that's a very good one.
What do you make of the other ones? Because I know in America, apparently there's a big difference between calling someone a hillbilly and a redneck. Redneck.
Yeah.
And obviously hillbilly comes from people who were living near the hills who were supporting the Brits, William of Orange, hillbilly. And then redneck is people who are working outside and have their necks red. So
it's all about how it's said and who it's said by. Like, I think
the intention.
Like, I've heard people calling people a farmer, and like it's meant in an offensive way. It's like, you know, like
you big fucking farmer.
Yeah, do you remember like in a famous fella from Care, a fella was like, he was a real tough marker, and he was like giving your man an awful dig in the mulch through the first half and baiting him, and your man just turned around at half time and was like, will you ever fuck off, you fucking farmer? And then your man was like, don't you ever forget.
You're nothing but a farmer.
Yeah, so like, you know, Anton can be offensive in the way it's said, but to me, in the terms of culture he's ever been used to me, I don't find it offensive. But I am from the country, and I'm very proud to be from the country. So yeah. if that's what a culture is, I'm happy enough with that.
I don't really care. I couldn't say that I'm particularly proud or not of being a culture. There's a bang of culture off me. That's fine. Bogman is a funny one. To me, people who live near the bog, I have heard people around Care use the expression bogman about people who come from the bog.
I've also heard sodbuster.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know if that's as geographical.
Muck savage. Yeah. They'd be terms now that, like, you see, we're in a town. So there might be boys from, like, up the mountain or a particular team that we'd play against where we'd be like, there's some fucking muck savages.
Mountain men. Muck savage is one of those funny terms, because the Farmers Journal, I think it was the 2010 ploughing, you know, the FC UK t-shirts were very popular at one stage.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, the Farmers Journal sold t-shirts with MCUK at their stand, and the things, like, they sold out on the first day, I think. Like, people loved that. They were quite cool. You know, they loved having the muck, you know, across their chest. So...
Or MUCK.
Yeah, but no, MCUK as in FCUK. You know the French Connection UK. So,
but they must have moved it to U and the C, did they?
No, they kept it as MCUK, but they kept it in the same lettering and font as the FC.
MUK.
That's a layered joke for farmers, isn't it?
Yeah, it's more of a visual joke. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I'm just writing it down here in front of me.
Yeah, Johnny wrote it down to look at it. I was like, yeah, you can see it says, yeah, you can see that. It's perfect for dyslexic people.
Bogman, Muck Savage, the Mountain Men.
Yeah.
The Aharlo lads and all would be called Mountain Men, and they don't mind it. Like, they take it as a term.
I wouldn't be calling any of them at an offensive anyway. They kill you.
The same as our mate the farmer. If you call them the Mountain Men, they'd be like, yeah, we are, we're tough. They love it.
Yeah. To say, yeah, I like being a culture. There you go. I don't find it offensive, Mara, but I did enjoy that mystery topic.
You're welcome. I'll email this segment of the podcast to the good people at Scrabble and see what they respond with.
Do. And the Farmer's Journal. On the Farmer's Journal by MCUK. Don't forget to rate, review and tell your friends about the Two Johnnies podcast. You can get in touch by using the hashtag #TwoJohnniesPod. That's the number two. You can also get us on Instagram at the Two Johnnies, and the email is podcast@thetwojohnnies.ie. Send us in any of your suggestions and horse on the correspondence, because we read it all. Even though it doesn't all make it in, we read it all. Now we're going to end the podcast as is traditional with our
yurts and darts
of the week. What have you got, John Boy?
I have to give a mention to a very, to me, an inspiring Care man, Munster and Ireland rugby player. Tommy O'Donnell announced his retirement this week, and I know Tommy a long time. Tommy is from Care, and I played with Tommy all the way up from under 10 under 12, and when we were minor, we won a county minor football B. Tommy was midfield, I was wing back. And back in those days, he was not the giant of a man he is now. I think his growth spurt happened a little later than some of the rugby lads. He'll clarify this. I was talking to him at about 18 or 19, because when we played minor, he would have been 16 or 17, and he wasn't huge. Tall, okay. Father's big, brother's big, but he wasn't a giant. Mm. And a couple of years later, I don't know if anyone knows this, but when Tommy was under contract playing for Munster and playing for Ireland, I was managing the Kerr Junior B team.
You can tell this now. He's
retired. I can tell this now. And Tommy was at the game watching because his brother was playing. And I said to him, do you want to play? And he made a phone call. And then he made another phone call. And then he put on boots and socks and shorts and was warming up, and he was on the phone to someone else in Munster Rugby. And eventually he came back and gave the nod he was going to play. So I was player manager at the time. And then I was in the strange position of, well, I can't start him.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah, I can't, it's such a difficult decision. Do I start a professional sportsman or do I drop fucking one of the boys who I've just got out of pub 10 minutes ago?
I know. My junior team weren't too bad.
Yeah, they only drank the night before. They never drank on the day of
a
game.
But I wasn't going to drop a lad who'd been training.
Yeah, okay.
So we brought Tommy on for the second half. And in that time, we had massive baggy jerseys.
Oh, yeah.
Huge, the old school baggy jerseys. And it looked player fit on Tommy.
Oh, wow.
And before the game, we were doing a bit of a warm-up. And then I was like, Tommy, you do the warm-up. Do you know? What am I doing here? Tommy, you do the stretches. Lad, he did all the activation stuff.
Boys are wrecked.
We didn't know where to be looking. He was like, yeah, just do the gate here. And I went, what? So, but he was great. He came on there, centre forward, full forward or somewhere, and sure, the team we were playing against just melted. Didn't know what to do with
him. Lay down and died.
Lay down and died in front of him. So it's been he's been part of the landscape of Kerr for all my life, my adult life anyway. When people talk about Kerr, we'd say, we have the castle and people come to Kerr, good fishing, and we have Tommy O'Donnell.
Mm.
And I suppose now two Johnnies will have to take up that mantle.
There you go.
But you know what I mean? All my life, it's like you growing up in Roscrea and you had John Carroll.
Mm.
We had Tommy O'Donnell.
And Baitins.
Baitins, yeah. So Tommy's my yurt of the week.
Yeah, 100%. And I'll double up on that as well.
Can I give you another yurt?
Yeah, I do have a yurt as well.
Okay, go.
No. Go on.
Well, this is a strange one. Do you know Carlsberg, the beer, right?
Right, yeah. Good sponsors, yeah.
They go on. Sponsors,
but be careful now what you say.
They've got a prototype new bottle made of paper.
What, like
it looks like cardboard.
Like the water, like is it tip water now is in cardboard?
No, this looks like a bottle of beer.
Okay.
That's like a Tetra Pak that milk would come
in. Yeah.
No, this looks like a bottle of beer, but it's kind of brown like cardboard and it's not see-through. You can't see the beer. So they reckon that it'll break down. It'll be completely compostable in a year. But I think beer drinkers are going to take a lot of getting your head around that. Okay, Smacks, you go into the off license and beer A is there. And it's there.
I just stopped you there. I'll drink beer out of anything.
Hear me now. Beer A is there and you like it.
Okay.
And it's in green bottles and it's in the cardboard bottles. Which one are you buying?
Probably, in fairness, you buy with your eyes. So you're probably buying what you know. So you're probably going for the green bottle. But curiosity would kill me to try the other bottle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I like a glass bottle. I like the, you know, it feels good in the mouth. It's cold. Yeah. The clink of the glass.
Tell you what I love. And I drank it the first time we went to America just because I was so mesmerized by it. Was the metallic bottle that Bud Light comes in America.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
It's basically a can in the shape of a bottle.
Yeah.
But the big thing is it going to change the taste of the beer? Because all beer that comes in a green bottle has this light-struck green bottle taste. So you're not like Heineken, Carlsberg, or Peroni all have green bottle taste. Not that they taste the same. Like a spud with salt on it and an egg with salt on it don't taste the same.
Yeah.
But you can tell they've both got salt. So any beer that comes in a green bottle has a kind of a green bottle taste.
Interesting.
So I
is that better for the environment than glass?
Well, glass is recyclable.
Yeah, that's what I don't get.
I'd prefer if they start, if the water bottle
company
started this. But just, do you know who the coolest man in the world is? Your man from the Carver.
Guy from the Carver. Who is that guy?
Mads Mikkelsen. You know, he was the bad guy in Casino Royale.
Yeah. Mm.
He's the coolest motherfucker on the planet.
And he's got a good job.
I think it's mad.
That'll be interesting to see.
Like, how will it react in the fridge? Will it get all They say it won't get
soggy as shit.
But they say it won't.
Jesus.
Do you know what I mean? I like the glass bottle. It's got the condensation on it. My mind is blown with this.
He's ill. He's taking a fit.
I'm taking a fit.
My dirt of the week.
Yeah.
Went to McDonald's. I don't want to be calling them out now, right? McDonald's and Cashel. But you know McFlurries? They have that weirdly shaped spoon.
Mm. Okay.
And the idea of the spoon is that you connect it up to the machine. Like you put in whatever. If you got a Smarties McFlurry, put in the ice cream, put the Smarties on top. Then you connect up the spoon to the machine and it like twirls the spoon.
Okay.
So like ice cream and Smarties get like nice and mixed.
A swirl.
Yeah. So a McFlurry, right? So I went up and got a Maltesers McFlurry the other day.
Sounds delicious.
Yeah. Put in the ice cream, put the Maltesers on top and just fuck the spoon in on top of it.
Ah, no.
No mixing. And I swear to God, so I didn't know, so I put in the spoon and I was like, jeez, that's a load of Maltesers. I've put a load of Maltesers in, lovely. And I took a bite and then I looked in. No more Maltesers. I'd used them all in the first bite. And I swear to God, I was sickened. I just sat in the car park eating it. I was like, yeah.
So you got near a mix.
Yeah. Only there were so many cars, I would have went round a second time. And like, here, get that mix, lad. Turn in. Turn out a few Maltesers and that there, will you? I was deeply hurt. That's my dirt for the week.
Frustrating,
yeah. Yeah. And like, I'll definitely be going back to Cashel. So don't anyone like reference it now, because I'm starting to regret and saying it. I just want to let you know, quietly, don't say that to me next time I come up, right? And I have a yurt.
Yes.
I echo what you said about Tommy Allen and everything about him. Yurt of the week.
Well,
what do we get sent during the week that I deeply enjoyed? What do we get sent?
Maura, what pulls down the knickers?
Snickers!
Yes. This isn't an ad, by the way, but Hultafers. I think that's how you pronounce it. They're the group, I think, that fucking order Snickers or whatever. But they got in touch and sent us down. Like, they asked us our sizes.
Workwear.
Yeah, I didn't know what to expect. But I got a Snickers hoodie, a Snickers jacket, Snickers t-shirt, and Snickers pants. And a Snickers belt, right, to go with the pants. And they also gave us a hammer. And then the holder, this was the ultimate bit. Now, this is what really tipped it off. You put the hammer into the holder, and it just hangs down off the pants, right? So obviously, like, I was mesmerised by this. So as soon as it came, I got into all the full kit. Full kit wanker, right? Put it all on. And then, like, I went out to Annie, and I was like, well, what do you think? Like, she was like, they don't suit you. She was like, they just don't, it just doesn't work, like. And I was like, wiling. She was like, they're too clean. I was like, I'll go out and roll around the garden if you want. Like. And then she was like, no, just for some reason, they don't, like, you know. And I was like, fucking. So I went down to her father. I was like, I'll have to show him now. He'll get a right laugh out of this. Because he's always like, you know, he never says it to me, but I know he thinks I'm useless for him. So I went down to him. I was like, well, what's she gonna gear? And without even missing a beat, he looked at the hammer and then looked at me, turned away and said, that hammer will have some good life. I just thought that's, in fairness to him, that was a good one though. But I wore them around. Knee pads have changed the game by.
It's class.
I'm putting on the Snickers not to clean the house. I was down doing a bit of dusting there on the skirting boards. But yeah, I was down not to bother down in the Snickers pants. You'd sit down there for hours.
You see, you often saw lads who were tradesmen walking around in the evenings with their Snickers on, and you wondered.
I wondered why. Now I know. I think I'm just going to get another couple of pairs and just wear them around.
They're class.
Just they're class. You'll see me now on the telly, man. A pair of Snickers on. But Chalkeye said he dropped me in a few screws and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Just so I could just fill up the pockets.
Cable ties.
Your cable ties, screws, insulating tape, measuring tape. That, like, just to really just set off the outfit.
Pencil behind the ear.
Pencil behind the ear, yeah. And I was tempted to nearly just buy a box of fags as well. Because I don't know. Like, maybe it's just like, I assume that, like, boys would be, and I have to be late for everything now. So yeah, I'm becoming a full tradesman, boy. But that was my yurt of the week. I really did enjoy those.
I swear to God, Maura, as soon as it came, he stopped. We were in the middle of something. He's like, oh, I'm putting this on.
Yeah,
full case. Yeah.
And you know what as well, I was after doing a bit of a home workout in the gym we have outside, right? And I had like pants on, you know, like shorts that have the underpants woven into them or whatever, like, built in. So when I put on the Snickers, but I didn't even have a pair of boxer shorts.
He stripped off completely here in front of me and put the Snickers on.
Proper tradesman, but
he had the arse hanging out as well.
Yeah. Oh, I make sure when I'm down doing the bit of dusting, I have the old arse crack out as well. It really just sets it off.
And that what they say when Snickers with no underpants on, you must be doing an Ixer.
Right, on that absolute bombshell, that's it.
One quick one.
Yes.
Have a word of the week.
Oh, wow. It's back.
Actually, also shout out, Ramadan is starting this week. Mm-hmm. Hello to all our Muslim listeners. I don't know how you go all day not eating.
Yeah.
I'd be fucking dead.
lad, if you were a Muslim,
I wouldn't work.
No, you wouldn't be able to do the podcast. You wouldn't be able to function. 2 hours of food, you're a nightmare.
Yeah, I just had 2 hours of dirt. Yeah. Well, you know what the way we say, what are you at? Oh, he was out last night and he was balubas.
Yeah.
You've heard this expression?
Yeah, balubas, cabbage, yeah.
Locked.
Yeah.
Loud.
Hammered.
Jumping around the place, gone yeah. bananas, balubas. Yeah. Do you know where it came out of?
Well.
Well, their Irish army were in what is now the Democratic Republic of Congo, and they had a run-in with a tribe of people there who were the Baluba tribe.
Wow.
B-A-L-U-B-A, Baluba tribe. And apparently, it's like they brought it home. Just they were pure Balubas.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I don't know if you can say that anymore, but it's hilarious.
Oh, I was just about to say, I'm off to get Balubas.
Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't bother me if I went to America and they were like, some lad is in up on the tables. Oh man, he's gone full Tipperary. You know, I was out last night, lad. I was absolutely temple derried. You know?
Oh lad, let's invent that right now.
I was absolutely claheened last night.
Oh lad.
You never go full Clonalty.
Oh man, I love it.
Smacks was Nina'd last night.
Not Nina. That's it from me, Johnny Smacks.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. From me, Johnny B.
For me, Maura.
Come on, Neil.
And from me, Neil.
Oh, look at that sexy voice. Good luck. We'll see you next week. Mind yourself. Stay safe.
Good luck.